Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Poke the Bear is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
And welcome into Poke the Bear, episode 217, presented by CLNS Media and sponsored by our good friends over at Prize Picks and Facta Meals. My name is Connor Ryan, and today we are joined by a very special guest in WEI.com's Scott McLaughlin. Scott, what's going on?
Not much, Connor. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's always good, Scott, I think, when we can get as much BU representation as we can on these podcasts. When it's with Evan, you know, you got him, just all he talks about is like the food they have at the halls at UMass. No one wants to hear about that shit. So good to have another very educated, sophisticated hockey mind here to talk to, who also happened to go to, I would say, a fantastic institution of higher learning.
Well, that's right, especially with the Frozen Four a week away. I see BU is there, and I don't see UMass. So
that is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They keep on talking about, you know, 2020. Like, I don't think nothing like mattered during that time in terms of sports. So UMass can have the little title. We'll see how BU does in the weeks ahead. If they lose to BC, if we get to a national championship game, it will never have happened. We won't talk about it ever again. But that's totally fine. We're getting ahead of ourselves here, aren't we, Scott?
Yeah, I gotta admit that BC team is quite scary. But hey, anything can happen in one game. So
exactly, it's just like the Providence BU game, which again never happened. It's funny how like those teams were so good, and then the NCAA was like, both teams win. Like, but we're not gonna handle like everyone. We're just here for the vibes. We're here for the good times. And the 2015 season never happened. So
and Jack Edwards brought up that game during Tuesday night's game against Nashville because Mark Jankowski's on the Predators, and I was like, what are you talking about, Jack? Come on.
Yeah, Jack, come on. What are you doing? I know it's the dog days of the regular season. I know people aren't really paying much attention, but no need to bring up a game that never even happened. But in terms of actually pivoting towards that game, in terms of things that actually happened, Scott, the Bruins beat the Nashville Predators 3-0. A Nashville team that has been really strong for pretty much the last couple months, playing really good hockey. And the Bruins, I think you look at this stretch here where they're playing a lot of tough teams that are either already in the playoff picture or are desperate to get into the playoffs. Nashville was another pretty good test. And when you look at just how tight that game was, how much it kind of felt like maybe a low event, locked in kind of playoff atmosphere, for them to come away with that win, and especially how they ended that game, I feel like it's pretty encouraging in terms of this team and how they want to build their game towards the actual postseason.
Yeah, exactly. It was a game where they had to work for offense, and they had to keep pushing. And you know, you're going into that third period, and you're kind of wondering, okay, are the Bruins going to have that extra push, or is this a game where like you just try to get to the finish line? Like I kind of thought the Washington game was a little bit of that, where it was like the Bruins they end up winning in the shootout, they get the big penalty kill in overtime, but the third period it felt like they just didn't quite have that last push to like really get through and win it in regulation. This Nashville game, they did. Like, they kept pushing, they kept working, and you get, you know, the big shorthanded goal from Coyle, and then you extend the lead. Most importantly, like, how often this season have we talked about this team not being able to close out games, not playing the right way with the lead? And that was the right way. Like, your stars step up. Pastrnak makes really great three-zone play to set up that goal from D zone, you know, poking the puck away, transitioning it, sets up Heinen, who then sets up Zacha. And then you get the empty netter too. Again, this team in defending 6-on-5 situations, it's been a concern at times this season. Well, they did it the right way. They get the puck out of the zone, Pastrnak takes aim at the empty net, 3-0, game over. So yeah, that's exactly how you need to play in the third period of a playoff game. And that is kind of what that felt like to me.
Yeah, no. And it's something too, where you just look at, I think, not to take a quote from Jeremy Swayman, which he mentions quite a bit, but gaining experience, and how I think you look at just these last couple of games, regardless of who they matched up against, they've either faced adversity or they've been kind of put in a situation where you could see it happening in the playoffs. I mean, we look at even at that Capitals game. Yes, it's not going to be 3-on-3 overtime. Thank God there won't be any shootouts in the playoffs. But you have just that stretch of adversity where you have to kill off a 4-minute power play. You look at the Nashville game where, again, you're in a situation where you've got a 6-on-5 situation. You got to kill plays. You got to, you know, snuff out a rally from the opposing team. Even looking at like Florida, we know how, you know, even though Florida's kind of playing like crap recently, they're still a team that has the game suited towards the playoffs. You go to Tampa, that's a team that's red hot right now. I just feel like beyond the fact that you're getting these tough tests in terms of teams that are, you might see in the playoffs, you're being put in those situations where, you know, what we saw in this third period against Nashville, you're probably going to see that quite a bit if this team's going to go on a pretty long run here.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something that they didn't really have to face enough down the stretch last year. And sure, you would like to see the Bruins have more success overall in these situations, like more consistency. You know, you don't want as many blown leads as they've had, but you hope that facing all that adversity, dealing with those situations, being in those kind of games, at least they're going to know what they're up against in the playoffs. It's not going to feel new to them. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be great at in the playoffs and going a long run, right? They could blow a couple games in the first round and be done in round one. Like, that's still in play, but at least you know that they've faced it this year. Whereas last year, it was like they got into that playoff series, all of a sudden Florida's making their pushes in the third period, and it's like, holy crap, like we don't really know what to do here. You know, it doesn't mean they're going to do the right thing, but at least they should know what the right thing is. Like, they've at least been in enough of these games now where it's like, okay, then they're not going to be caught off guard. Whether they can execute and get the job done is still, you know, a different story.
Yes. And it almost feels like last year was, what's the quote? Like, everyone's got a game plan to get punched in the mouth. I feel like that Bruins team was on such a heater the entire season long, but like, you all of a sudden go up against this Florida team, get punched in the face, and they just, whether it's the players on the ice, the execution, how they handle the goalie rotation, it just feels like that team was rattled. They hadn't faced that kind of adversity before. So as you said, to go through those stretches is going to be key for the playoffs. And especially, I think you look at Linus Ullmark and how he's playing as of late. 32 save shutout against Nashville. And as much as we talk about Scott getting ready for the playoffs, we talk about, you know, grit, intensity, physicality, puck possession, all these things, maybe we're not talking enough about the power of friendship and the power of vibes, Scott, because since Linus Ullmark stuck around with the Bruins, didn't get traded, however that situation went down, he's been fantastic. I think he's 4-2, .950 save percentage since the deadline. I think you look at the way the Bruins are handling this, and obviously it seems like they keep on going back and forth between Ullmark and Swayman in terms of just regular season games, but it sure feels like a given at this point, barring something catastrophic down the stretch here, that Ullmark's going to get the start in game one, right?
Yeah, he certainly has moved ahead of Swayman. And you mentioned, you know, since the trade deadline, he's clearly been better since then. But really, you can go all the way back to the All-Star break and say he's been better since then. So, yeah, I think you'd still feel a lot better about the goaltending situation if Swayman gets going here down the stretch too, because he's had some good games for sure. But it's been more inconsistent than it was pre-All-Star break, where he was one of the best goalies in the league and was rightfully an all-star himself. So you want Swayman to get back to that level. You just feel better having both of them going. And whether you're rotating or doing something hybrid or giving up, you know, maybe Ullmark gets two or three games and you go from there. like, no matter what you're doing, you're still going to feel best about it if both goalies are playing well. Because, you know, look, Ullmark has faltered in the playoffs before. So there's a really good chance you're going to have to use both goalies in the playoffs. No matter what, no matter how it breaks down or what the situation is. But yes, right now, Ullmark has to be the game one starter unless things completely flip over these final six games.
And Scott, I'll ask you a question that's a little bit under the radar. I feel like not enough people are asking or talking about this, rather. But how do you see the goalie situation panning out? How do you want the Bruins to execute this? I know that's not something that anyone's mentioned on any podcast before. But if you were pulling the strings here, if you were pushing the buttons, how would you want them to handle the goalie rotation or whoever they want to mention in the platoon, what have you?
I was pro rotation last year leading up to the playoffs. I've been pro rotation this year, so I'm going to stick with it. Ullmark would be my game one starter, but if I'm rotating till the end of the regular season, and again, like, I'll throw in a caveat of Swayman hopefully finishes strong his last three starts or whatever it's going to be. Obviously, like if Swayman really struggles and is like 850 over his last 10 games going in, then you're probably going to have to ride Ullmark. Like, then the decision might be out of your hands. But assuming Swayman plays pretty well here his last couple starts, I'm rotating. I'm going Ullmark 1, Swayman 2, and then adjust from there. Like, even as I say I've been pro-rotation, I've never been, like, you have to stick with
every,
it no matter
every
what.
Other game.
And, yeah, and, like, never go away from it, even if someone loses three in a row. Like, no, like, come on, guys. Like, let's use a little bit of common sense here. We don't have to box ourselves in. But to start, I'm pro-rotation. I'm pro giving it a shot. I think it's worked so well in the regular season that, yes, I hear all the old heads and, you know, no one's done it. And the last time a team won a cup with something of a rotation was in 1972 with Jerry Cheevers and Eddie Johnston. And, like, I get it. I understand it doesn't happen. I also think very few teams have had two goalies like these two goalies. So I'm not worried about, like, what, you know, some random team did or didn't do in 2015. I'm worried about the two goalies that I have, who I believe are really good, and continuing to utilize the strength of my team.
Yeah. That's like if, like, Rick Barry or someone from, like, the 60s Warriors, I know different sport, but, like, 60s Warriors is like, I mean, you can't have a guy like Steph Curry shoot threes like that. We wouldn't use to do that in a day. It's like, well, you have what you have on your roster. And if you have two number one goalies that are playing at a high level, I'm glad you hit on the point that, like, a goalie rotation does not mean it has to be this rigid thing where it's like, you know, we've heard it, whether it's on, you know, radio, other people mentioning it. It's like, if Linus Ullmark goes out there in a game and has a friggin' 37 save shutout, by the preordained ruling of the goalie rotation rules that Bob Esenza sets down, you must go with Jeremy Swayman in the next game. It's like, no, if Ullmark has a 37 save shutout, he's going to get the net in the next game. Like, it's all about, you know, being practical about these things and what puts you in the best situation to succeed. When you have two goalies like this that are on playing at a high level, you've got a luxury of turning to one of those guys. But if one is playing better, you're going to stick with that guy.
Yeah, for sure. Like, once you get into the series, it's all about momentum. And the thing is, you know, the other argument I hear a lot is, well, if you're going with a rotation or platoon or whatever you want to call it, you know, you're committing to using both guys, you're going to create too many questions about who gets a star. Like, you know, like, I have this conversation with Razor a lot on Sunday Skate where he lays out, like, okay, what if you win game one with Ullmark, but he was only okay, and you lose game two with Swayman, but he stopped 31 of 33, and, you know, like, then what do you do? And it's like, well, you can go back to – You can really go either way. Like, you can go back to Ullmark and see if he gets right, or you can stick with Swayman because he was better. Like, it's fine, but you're going to have questions no matter what. Like, you tried to ride one guy last year and there were questions, because that's going to be the nature of the game when you have two goalies who play at such a high level, is unless plan A, whatever your plan A is, unless that works to perfection, there's always going to be a question of, when do you go to the other guy, or who do you start this game, or, you know, how long of a leash does he get? Like, there's going to be questions no matter what, because you have two really good goalies.
Yeah. I don't think there's been any team that goes into the playoffs, one with a set lineup and two goes through the entire playoff run, however long it goes, with the same group in place. There's going to be a lot of switching, adjusting, injuries. A lot can happen between April and June if the Bruins are end up playing that far into it. But before we dive into a little bit more about the Bruins, let's take a quick break, hear from our good friends over at Prize Picks.
Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Prize Picks is so easy to play. I can make my Celtic picks and make my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals and easy gameplay and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what makes Prize Picks the number one fantasy sports app. Celtics and NBA fans, you can get in on Prize Picks in 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. On Prize Picks this week, I'm selecting Jason Tatum to dish out more than 5 assists and his teammate Jaylen Brown to have more than 22.5 points. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks.
Shout out to our good friends over at Prize Picks, and shout out to the ghost of Evan Marinovsky for that beautiful ad.
I can't believe I still have to hear his voice.
No, I had to do it. There's one that I have, but also it runs for like an extra like 50 seconds. So I'm like, you know, Evan, we'll give him props. He did go to UMass, but crisp ad read and all the important points. So we'll give him a shout out, much to the chagrin of all of us here. But shout out Prize Picks, and I guess Evan Marinovsky. But Scott, looking a little bit more at that Bruins win over Nashville, one of the negatives from that game, Justin Brezzo, who's been one of the biggest surprises this year, a great, you know, feel good story. I know you have a great piece on him, on kind of his road to the Bruins on WEI.com. So please, everyone, still check that out because it's a great story about kind of how he's built out his own career and carved a path to the NHL. But remains to be seen how long he's going to be out. Montgomery, as is usually the case after games, I know people are very doom and gloom, but we've heard multiple times when guys are banged up, got to get more testing, got to get more of a timeline here. But if Brezzo does have to miss, you know, a significant stretch here with a shoulder or whatever it may be that he hurt in that game, that's a sneaky, pretty big loss for the Bruins, for a guy that has been really good on the fourth line and like could have had a case for like getting further up in the lineup if some of the guys were lagging a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks for the plug first off. I promise I didn't jinx him. Please don't put in the papers fear. Please don't put in the papers that I jinxed him.
Yes.
But yeah, it absolutely could be a fairly significant loss because he's really brought an element that had been missing from the fourth line, especially, but maybe even bottom six in general, just of a guy who can protect pucks down low, who can make plays around the net, who gets to the front of the net, who has size. And, you know, has also been an asset on the second power play unit. He's moved up a couple times in the lineup, whether that's in game, we've seen him up on the line with Coyle and Marchand, or even to start a game on the third line a couple times. I thought he played pretty well with Geeky and DeBrusque on Saturday. And, you know, there's an opening there on that third line. Like, had been James Van Riemsdyk's spot for a long time. Combination of illness and just inconsistency from him as sort of open that door for someone else to potentially steal that. And Brezzo seemed like someone in the running there. You know, you can look at it and say, like, well, Pat Maroon has started practicing with the team and he brings some of those same things. So, you know, hey, maybe Maroon comes back just as you lose Brezzo. And there's some truth in that, but there's no rule that says you can't have two guys like that in your bottom six. Like,
right.
I would have liked to have seen, and it might still happen, because as you said, like, Brezzo might be minor. He might play in the next couple games. But, you know, you can have both of those guys in your lineup. And maybe they're on the same line. Maybe they're on two different lines. But, yeah, Brezzo's just been playing really well. And it was looking like a lineup lock. So anytime you lose someone who is playing like one of your 10 or 11 best forwards, yeah, there's a blow there. Sure, it's not Pastrnak or Marchand. Like, let's not go crazy, but it's someone who's playing well and helping you win games.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely something worth keeping tabs on, especially as we see if, as you mentioned, a guy like JVR, if he can kind of get back to his game. Because if he's struggling down the stretch, he's not producing, then that opens the door to that. If Brazo was healthy, that could be a guy that could be in line for more minutes over these last couple of games. But looking at another player, as you said, David Pastrnak, don't have to worry about him. I don't think he's a feel-good underdog story at this point. He's one of the best players in the NHL. But I think when you look at his game this season and the fact that he finished second in the Hart Trophy voting last year, I don't think he'll finish second this year. And I think we know like the usual suspects who will probably be the front runners this year. But I think you look at just the way Pastrnak has, one, shifted his approach offensively, right? Like, I mean, listen, guy still is going to rack up points. He's still, you know, on pace for another impressive season. But to, you know, become more of a playmaker and not be like a one-trick pony, to make the most of the players around him, elevate guys like Zacha and Tiefton Hyland, who's been a great fit there. But even at, you mentioned it earlier on, like, he's not going to be winning the Selke. He's not going to be doing anything like that. He's not going to be winning every board battle, but he's made strides in those areas of the game that is leading towards winning hockey. And again, that doesn't mean he's going to be a 200-foot player by any means, but to see his growth this year has been huge for this team beyond just the obvious offensive production. Like, do you think he has more of a convincing case for the Hart this year as opposed to last year?
I think on its own, his case would be more convincing because the Bruins have had to rely on him more. And he's probably going to end up with more points than last year or right in the same range. Obviously, goal total down, but he already has a career high in assists. You know, I think his line mates have been, you know, and this isn't a knock on Pavel Zacha and Danton Heinen, who have been a really good fit with him. That's become a really good line. But, you know, you look at who some of the other MVP candidates have on their lines, and it's like Connor McDavid has Zach Hyman, who's a 50-goal scorer, and a lot of times Leon Draisaitl as well. Nathan McKinnon has Rantanen on his right pretty much all season. Austin Matthews has had one of Marner and Nylander on his line at all times. Kucherov has Braden Point as his center, and a lot of times Steven Stamkos as his left wing. Like, Pastrnak hasn't had that. The best he gets is sometimes he gets teamed up with Marchand, who we all love Brad Marchand, but he's not in that superstar class anymore. He's still a really good player, but he's not, you know, he doesn't have another 100-point season coming. So it's remarkable. Like, so much of the Bruins' offense has had to run through Pastrnak, and he's been up to it. You know, Jim Montgomery has talked about how he, you know, they've had to rely on him more to, as you said, to make plays, to make things happen, to have the puck on a stick and not just, hey, find a spot to get open and Krejci will get you the puck. He's had to make more things happen. And yeah, do you also think you've seen more commitment defensively? Not that it's ever going to be a strength, but I think you've seen him buy in there. I think he's brought more physicality for a stretch of this season. You know, we saw down in Florida, the reverse hit on Matthew Tkachuk that helped set up a goal. So I think he's playing really well. You know, unfortunately for him, when it comes to the MVP race, some of those guys I mentioned, McKinnon and Kucherov have 127 points, Connor McDavid 126, you know, Austin Matthews 62 goals. Like, it's hard to fight that fight. So he may very well finish fifth, or I think probably fifth in Hart Trophy voting, maybe even sixth, but it definitely could be a stronger all-around season than last year when he finished second.
Yeah, it's one of those things, too, where even though he may not finish further down, you look at just the state of this team, especially early on when it feels like the Bruins had such tough sledding with so many different guys and new spots, offense wasn't going, this team would be in probably a lot they'd probably be either, you know, third in the Atlantic, or maybe they'd be fighting for a wild card spot right now if it wasn't Pastrnak kind of doing the heavy lifting on offense out of the gate. So again, regardless of where he finishes, it's going to be a really, really strong season from him. Scott, before we wrap this up, let's take another quick break here from our good friends over at Factor Meals. Take it away, Evan.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Shout out once again to our good friends over at Factor Meals. And once again, great ad read, Evan. Great job, man. All right, Scott, let's look a little bit ahead to the postseason. And I think when we look at the Bruins and their playoff positioning, a lot of people are focused on Florida and where exactly the Bruins match up there in terms of standing on top of the Atlantic. I wonder if Bruins fans should maybe start paying more attention to the New York Rangers and the Hurricanes and whether or not the Bruins finish first overall in the East, because right now it feels, at least at this stage, that the Bruins are setting themselves up for a matchup against the Lightning, who are the first wild card spot. And I got to say, doesn't feel great. I feel like the vibes wouldn't be all that high going up against a team in Tampa that started slow, as we all expected, but whether you look at the top end talent they have, really good goalie who can steal you a series or two or three if he's locked in the experience they have, kind of feels like Tampa would be their worst case scenario in terms of a first round draw.
Yeah, they would be the opponent I would least want to see. They've been playing better hockey in the second half, still have so much high end talent. You know, questions about depth for sure. Like, they're not as deep of a team as they once were, but Anthony Duclair's been, he was a really good trade deadline addition for them. And, you know, if you kind of break down, like, I'll call it like the statistical profile, and you just looked at like, okay, what do they do well? What's a weakness? Whatever. Oddly enough, the thing you'd look at as a weakness, if you didn't know the name, would be goaltending.
Right.
Because you'd say they rank 28th in the NHL in save percentage. But then you're like, yeah, but their goalie's Andrei Vasilevskiy, so who cares? Like, okay, he's having the worst quote-unquote season of his career, 900 save percentage. But I'm not counting that guy out in the playoffs. Like, there's no way I'm looking at Tampa and being like, oh, well, goaltending's a weakness. Nope. I don't really care what his regular season number is. I know he had a major surgery and he missed time to start the year. And maybe he's still not 100% from that. But I'm going to need to see that guy struggle in the playoffs before I actually, you know, consider that any sort of weakness. So, yeah, I'd rather face Toronto where goaltending could actually be a weakness. Defense certainly could be. And you would definitely rather get to that top seed overall and face any of those wildcard teams who all seem to not want to actually make the playoffs. Like, they are all playing.
It's
like
both, it's both strategy.
Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, I know anything can happen in the playoffs, and whoever does make it presumably has been playing some desperate hockey, but I would definitely take any of those guys over Tampa or Toronto.
Yeah. And it also just feels like Tampa, as much as you said, they don't have the same depth of, like, you've got a third line of like Goudreau and Blake Coleman and those kind of players. You still have like physical players who can still like make an impact. Like Tanner Jeannot, I don't think it's necessarily been like a home run addition for them, but like uppercutted Frederick into like the fifth balcony in that game. Like, that's a guy that you look at what those guys can do in the playoffs. Like, that's where you can, you know, land some welts. And when all of a sudden you still have a top six litter with guys like Kucherov and Point and Stamkos, like, you can have those guys do your heavy lifting while you're kind of bottom of the roster and kind of take out the other team as well. Like, that's just a team that the way they're structured, yeah, the depth maybe isn't there, but the guys that they do have kind of cater towards what you want in the playoffs.
Right. And like, you know, I don't know that Matt Dumba was a home run trade for them, but another guy who can land a big hit that can like shift a series or shift momentum in a game. You know, he can still do that at this point in his career. Mikey Asamoah is just like a total pest. Like he'll get under your skin over the course of a 7-game series. So yeah, that there's even with that potentially being a weakness of that team, there's guys there that you would absolutely come to hate over the course of the series.
Yeah. So we will see how exactly it all plays out. I'm sure that we'll, you know, have this discussion in a couple of days and it'll look drastically different in terms of it being Detroit or Washington or whoever the hell lands up there. Again, I think keeping tabs on Carolina, which that game on Thursday will be big. Rangers moving forward, those are going to be huge in terms of whether the Bruins can kind of avoid that Tampa Bay matchup. But Scott, before we let you go, where can we read your stuff? Where can we hear you? All that good stuff.
Yeah, you can read me, weei.com. Listen to the Skate podcast. Listen to Sunday Skate every Sunday, 9 to 11 a.m. on WEEI. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Perfect. All right. Well, this is episode 217 of Poke the Bear. I'm Connor Ryan. That's Scott McLaughlin. You fans have a great rest of your week.